Let's start with a summary of what we saw yesterday. So yesterday, during the lecture, we saw the use of a function, ake, of Hamiltonian, which would, this function basically diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, produces a matrix, U. This matrix contains, as vectors, the eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian. And if you focus on the first one, that's the ground state. Okay, and then we saw we also obtain a matrix, a diagonal matrix, with the eigenvalues. And the first eigenvalue was the ground state energy. Okay, so we were using this function to obtain, maybe we just were interested in the ground state, but nevertheless we were diagonalizing the whole matrix. And this came at a cost which was 2 to the n to the 3, so 2 to the 3n. That's the cost of diagonalizing a matrix. Do you know why this is the cost of diagonalizing a matrix?
No.
Do you want to know? They are asking me questions. All right, so suppose you have a matrix that is L times L. Okay. So this is our matrix. And if I tell you that the algorithm that diagonalizes this matrix is based on multiplying matrices of this size, then all we need, believe me that what we need to understand is the cost of multiplying two such matrices. Okay, so let's look at the cost of multiplying matrix M times matrix N, okay, to produce matrix O. All right, so let's do this component by component. Gamma beta, okay? So we want to do this. Now let's count how many operations, basic steps we have to take here. So gamma goes from 1 to L, right? And alpha and beta also run from 1 to L in this expression, okay? So what we're saying is the following. Let's fix alpha and beta, okay? We are fixing alpha and beta. So say alpha is equal to 3. And beta is equal to 7, and then we have gamma, okay? So for this particular case, what you see is that the number of operations we have to apply is proportional to L, right? We can make this sum with L basic steps. These basic steps are take these numbers, multiply them, okay? You take those two numbers, you multiply them, you do these L times, and then you add them together. This can be done in L steps. And now we have to do this operation for each value of alpha and for each value of beta, right? So we have to do L squared times this basic operation, which was cost L. So the cost of multiplying this, the cost goes as L to the third power, okay? Is that clear? Is that clear? Yes? Okay, so there is a basic operation we have to do here, which takes L steps, and we have to do it L squared times. So now you take L, you replace it with 2 to the n, which is the dimension of the Hilbert space, and you get this scaling. Diagonalizing the Hamiltonian, which is a 2 to the n times 2 to the n matrix, cost has a cost that is proportional. So cost scales as 2 to the n to the third power, okay?
You're basically saying that I can diagonalize a matrix by doing a constant number of matrix multiplications.
Yes.
Is that obvious?
Not to me.
Because if I just want to, calculating, for example, a determinant and solving a polynomial equation. I mean, well, calculating a determinant costs a lot more than just L than an L cubed. So.
I don't think so. But anyway, exercise. Check the literature and see whether this can be done. Right? Okay, so if you want from this, just take home that multiplying two matrices of which are L times L comes with a cost which is proportional to L to the third power. Okay? And then it turns out that this is also the cost of diagonalizing a matrix, and this is related to the fact that you can use matrix multiplication to accomplish that. All right, so yesterday we used this method. Then I don't know if it was clear from the homework, during the tutorial, but you had this other function, which was Ising NB, which was using eggs, not egg, but eggs. What this does for you is you input the matrix again, and you tell MATLAB how many eigenvectors you want it to compute. Okay? And it will compute the first, for instance, in this case, if it's a 3, it will give you the first 3 eigenvalues and first 3 eigenvectors. So the cost in this case is just 2 to the n squared. Okay? And well, that's one observation that we managed. This was very suspicious, right? We were computing all the spectrum, and then maybe we were only interested in the ground state. So it's clear that we were computing too much. So MATLAB does this for you also. Gets you just the lowest eigenvalues and the corresponding eigenvectors. And how MATLAB works internally, it's a mystery to me, but there are several possible algorithms that will do this for you. One is called LANXOS, which I will not explain, but I just want you to know this name. And then the one we will review today is a primitive version of LANXOS, but simpler to explain and to program, which is called Power Method. And that's the one we're going to use today. Okay, so today we talk about the Power Method. There will be two versions of it. The first version will be such that it will get us the ground state with a cost that, as I said, it's 2 to the n squared, so 2 to the 2n. But then if we add locality, meaning if we exploit the fact that the Hamiltonian is the sum of local terms involving, say, 2 sides at a time, we can bring the cost down to 2 to the n. Okay? And that's what we will do today. And this is the best we can do with this type of manipulations, 2 to the n. All right, so what's the power method? That's very simple. So suppose that you have a vector with components chi0, chi1, chi d. And suppose that you have a Hamiltonian, which happens to be already diagonal. So this would be E0, E1, ED. Okay. Now, and I'm going to assume that E0, which is the ground state energy, in absolute value is larger than E1. I'm going to assume that it's strictly larger than E1. And then the rest of energies. All right, so now what we could ask is the following. If we take, what happens if we take a Hamiltonian to some power and we apply it on the state chi? Okay? Well, since everything is diagonal, we can do this explicitly, and you can convince yourself, right? So h to the p, just you put powers here, right? And you multiply, and what you get is E0 to the p, chi0, E1 to the p, chi1, ED to the p, chi d. Okay, so each component has been multiplied by a power of the corresponding energy. And then what you realize quickly is that, okay, let me expand this. This is E0 to the power p times the following, chi0. Times this vector plus chi1, and then we have E1 over E0 to the power p, etc. Other terms that are similar. And what you see here clearly is that except for this factor, which may be very large, we have this factor here, which if you look at this, let's look at how much this, the absolute value of this is. This is exponential in p, decays exponentially in p, right? We said that E0 is larger in absolute value than E1, so this is a number that is smaller than 1, right? So imagine this is 0.9. Now to the power p, for p large, this goes to 0 exponentially fast, okay? So what this is telling us is that if we start with a Hamiltonian, so where are we? Here. If you start with some state, random state, and in the vector space, so some random vector, and you apply high power of the Hamiltonian, the result of this will be something that is arbitrarily close to the ground state. Okay, the rest of contributions become negligible. Okay, so that's the power method. We'll take a vector and we'll apply the Hamiltonian many times to it. Okay, the resulting vector maybe has a very large norm, but we just need to normalize it. And it will be essentially the ground state. Okay?
What if your random choice, you accidentally choose a random choice which doesn't have any of the ground state in it?
Good question. So then we'll pick up the first. So if your initial state had the zero here, and this is strictly zero. So we'll go down to the first contribution, the first non-trivial overlap. Right? So indeed, I was assuming that the overlap with the ground state of the initial state, this was different from zero. Now, numerically, we have always some error, some truncation error. This can generate a non-trivial overlap, even if you started with a zero there. Over iterations, you may get 10 to the minus 15. This will grow exponentially fast. OK? All right, so I don't know what the magic words are, but what do I do to get the screen down? Dennis? Is there a magic button for the screen here? Oh, wow. Oh, I was covering with this. Still. Oh, yeah, it's here. So we didn't do that, right? You did? Okay. All right, so let's get MATLAB started. And maybe we want to change slides here or something. And Dennis, did you manage to put those three files in the wiki?
Yeah.
So they should download them now. Okay, so if you have MATLAB on, then let's create a new subdirectory in here. I'm going to call mine PSI 2014 session 2. How was that? New folder? PSI 2014 session 2. Okay, and then you should have three files on the wiki that are for today, and these files should be, let's Let's see if I remember properly. Actually, let's put also the create Hamiltonian function from the from yesterday. Create Hamiltonian. Create Ising Hamiltonian. And then create two side Ising Hamiltonian. Apply H2. So you should be able to download this directly from the wiki. Okay. Do you have a new subdirectory? Maybe called PSI 2014 session 2 with those four files in it. Did anybody get that far? Success? One, two. Okay, several people. Do we wait for someone else? Is somebody still trying? Nope. Okay. Then I'll start. So what we want to start with is a simple function. We're gonna start a new file script. And title, we can call it power method 1. Okay. And that's PSI 2014 session 2 power method 1. And we'll say here that the cost is 2 to the 2n. Okay, so this is going to be very simple. We start with clear all, then set number of sides to 9. We'll have a number of iterations. This is the power that we're applying. For some reason, I call it Q, and it's going to be, say, 100. Then remember the Hamiltonian, we have magnetic field, which we could set to 1. J could be equal to 1. And now we can, boundary also set to 1. Okay, and now we simply call the function create Ising Hamiltonian so that we don't need to create the Hamiltonian from scratch. And with variables input n, j, h, and boundary. Okay, so we've created h. Okay. And now what we're going to do is we're going to initialize, we're going to create, so we have already created a Hamiltonian, and now we want to create some state, some random initial state. So we could, for instance, have psi equal to rand. We're creating a column vector of size 2 to the n, comma 1. And the Hamiltonian is real, so you can argue that the ground state can be chosen to be real. So we won't add imaginary part. And then we're also going to initialize a variable, which is going to be a vector, actually, containing the energies that we get for our state at each time we apply the Hamiltonian on it. So this will have q different values, which we initialize to zero. Okay? So we have just created the Hamiltonian and a random initial state. And now we'll just run a loop from q equal to 1 to capital Q. And at each step, we'll apply the Hamiltonian. So on the state. So psi is going to be equal to H times psi, right? We're just changing our state. We're replacing it with H times the state. Okay? And now we're just going to normalize this state so that it doesn't blow up. So psi is equal to psi divided by its norm, and its norm is nothing but the square root of the scalar product of psi with itself. And finally, we compute the energy, but the energy is nothing but psi prime times H times psi. So we're done. And just to know where we are, we can print Q at each step so that we can follow let's just have this Q there. It will print in which step we are in. If the loop is slow, then we'll see how much to go. And finally, we can plot the results, the energies. Maybe let's try this one. And that's it. This is the power method. Big deal. I mean, let's see if it works, right? But oh. Okay. So it's so fast that I'm going to put 1,000 steps instead. Okay. So what we have here is the following. With at each iteration, we take the state that we had, we multiply by the Hamiltonian. Okay? And then we look at the resulting state, we compute the energy, and as you can see, the energy starts being high and it lowers quickly. And it becomes stable. So maybe I go back one step. If we just had 100 iterations, you see that the energy has not yet converged. Okay. All right, perfect. So this is the version where we are still building the Hamiltonian, the whole Hamiltonian, and just building this Hamiltonian, which is a matrix 2 to the n times 2 to the n, gives us a cost, which is 2 to the 2n. Now, for n equal to 9, that's not a problem. But if you go to n equal to, I don't know, 15, well, don't try now, but it could be a problem. Can we go to larger n's? Well, let's try to reduce the complexity, okay, of this calculation. With the observation that we don't really need to build a Hamiltonian explicitly in order to multiply a vector with a Hamiltonian. The reason for that is that the Hamiltonian is sum of local terms, and what we could do is to just multiply our vector by each term individually and then add all these contributions. I'll explain this in a minute, but what we need to do first is to go back to the command window, and we need to introduce a couple more of instructions from MATLAB. So we want to be able to deal with tensors. I think we'll see enough here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create some tensor with a number of legs, and I'm going to start manipulating it with a couple of instructions from MATLAB. So first thing is we create a tensor, for instance, T1, which could be T1 could be, I don't know, what did I choose here? 4, 3, 5. So if you type this in, MATLAB will create a tensor with three indices. The first index runs from 1 to 4. The second index runs from 1 to 3. The third index runs from 1 to 5. Okay? That's just an array of numbers labeled by three indices. And what we want to do is we want to learn how to manipulate this tensor, a number of basic instructions. For instance, the first thing we could do is we could ask, if we forgot how large the tensor is, we could ask, what's the size? And if you ask MATLAB what's the size of a tensor, it will tell you it has three, it will give you the number of indices, and for each index, it will tell you how many values it takes. So it's 4, 3, and 5, okay? So instruction number one is size of a tensor. Now, another useful function is reshape. So we're going to create a second tensor, which is just going to be a reshape of the first one. And then what we need to specify is how we are organizing the indices. Yeah.
And T1 is a random tensor?
T1 is a random, is a tensor of fixed size and random coefficients, yes. Oh. That's right. So by writing rand and then a list of integers, mm-hmm. positive integers, you create a tensor with number of indices, and each index runs over the values specified by these positive integers. So now what we're going to do, so if this was T1, we're going to use reshape. And reshape is going to do the following. We can use reshape to define a new tensor, in this case T2, with four indices, where T2 is, you take T1, and then you split the first index. Okay, so if you look at the command, it says reshape T1, and then there is a vector that says 2, 2, 3, 5. Okay, this vector has four components, so we're telling MATLAB that we want to convert T1 into a tensor with four indices. Okay, and the first two indices run from 1 to 2. And then the third index runs from 1 to 3, and the last index from 1 to 5. So basically, what we've done here is we've taken the first index, which we're running from 1 to 4, and we split it into two indices, each running from 1 to 2. Okay. So that's what reshape does for you. So if we type size of T2, then indeed, that's the size of the tensor. Okay, so we have learned size and reshape. Questions?
How does the reshape function know like which indices you want to be split?
So MATLAB stores all the components of the tensor as a vector, and then it just cuts this array into pieces according to some prescribed order. What you need to know, I mean, there are more details to this, but what you need to know at the moment is that if you were to keep the other indices the same and just, so you notice that we took the 4 and we divided it into two pieces, then that's what's going to happen. It will take that index and break it into two. Maybe the reverse transformation makes more sense or it's more intuitive. If you had two indices with values 2 and 2, if you put them together, you'll get a single index that runs over four values. Right, and this index, you just can think of it as the composite index. Right, you have two options here, two options there. The tensor product is four options.
Coming back to the power method, we're making an assumption on the Hamiltonian that the eigenvalues satisfy those inequalities, right?
These inequalities are, if you are, Hamiltonian is Hermitian. You can always diagonalize it and organize the eigenvalues in some way.
But I was thinking, for example, in the case of the, if I want to apply this to a harmonic oscillator, right, then I know that the zero-point energy is not greater than the other energies, right? It's smaller. So if I want to apply the power method to that particular Hamiltonian.
Right, so we may have to shift the whole spectrum. If it's if your Hamiltonian is finite dimensional,
yes.
Not, I mean, in the case of harmonic oscillator, you have, it keeps going, right? But if you truncate it at some, if it's justified to truncate it after, say, 20 levels, then you have a finite dimensional matrix. Yes. Then you can add identity such that you shift all the eigenvalues to being negative, and then the ground state will have the largest absolute value. So in this case, I was already playing with the fact that I know that the ground state has energy minus whatever, mm-hmm. which is an absolute value is larger than the rest. If otherwise, I would have had to rescale it. And I will have to rescale it in a minute, I mean, later on.
And the other thing is, does this depend on whether my ground state is degenerate or not?
Right. If the ground state was degenerate, then there is no way to pick one from the other. So for any random initial state, you'll end up in some ground state. But different initial states will give you different ground states. So you could recover the whole ground set space in this way. OK? Excellent. So we know how to create a tensor with a number of legs or indices, and now we know how to reshape it. So we can join two indices or split two indices. Now, the next thing is permute. We want to exchange the order of the indices. Okay, so permute, let's try this. Let's define T3, a new tensor. It's going to be equal to permute of T2. And then, now we have, again, a vector, but this is a permutation vector. And I'm going to use it to indicate that index 1 remains in 1, index 2 remains in 2, and now the next index 3 is going to be what used to be 4, and the new index 4 is what used to be 3. So what I'm doing is I define T3 to be equal to T4, where, sorry, I'm defining what? Thanks. T2 by exchanging indices 3 and 4. There. OK? So if I do that, I'm going to put semicolon here. And then I say, what's the size of T2? Can we have middle ground light, so we can. Can you see the blackboard even if the light is off?
I'm like that a little bit.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Maybe in the first row. Okay, so let's look at the size of this tensor that we just created, T3. And you can see that indeed, compared to T2, T3 has inverted the last two indices. Okay, so basically we're playing with always the same components. These tensors all have the same components, but we are restructuring all these coefficients in different ways, right? So if the size, this guy has indices 2, of size 2, 2, 3, and 5, this means that the size of this is 4, shouldn't do this in public, 20, 60. 60 components. This tensor contains 60 components. These components, these 60 numbers, right, are the same in here, in T1, in T2, in T3. We're just changing how they are organized into a tensor. Okay? We're changing the indices that label them. Okay, so we have a single set of data, and we are just reorganizing all these coefficients. All right, so this is permute. And now what we could do is, just to complete this, is to define T4 as being equal to reshape of T3. Four, five, three, which is telling us that we're putting together the first two indices of T3. And finally, we could define T5 to be equal to permute of T4, where we change, we leave the first two components, sorry, the first index as it is, and we exchange the second and the third. And I followed a sequence, particular sequence, for a reason, which I want to explain to you. Which maybe I can do right here. So what I've done then is I've defined T4 to be equal T3, where I put together the first two indices of T3, okay, and then I've defined T5 to be equal to T4, where I've exchanged the last two indices. And so what we could do now is just graphically, without going crazy with the instructions, we could try to follow the whole process and see who is T5. Okay. So let me do this in here. We start with T1. And the first thing we did was a reshape that split this index into two. Okay. Next, we applied a permute that was changing. So at this point, we're here, and now we change these two indices, right? That was T3. Then the next step, T4, was to reshape these two together, right? And then T5 consisted in taking this and changing the order here. So if you look at this, we've been playing around, but we haven't done anything, because if we exchange the two indices twice, we haven't done anything on this part. And here we split the index, and then we join it again. So nothing happened there. So the prediction is that T5 is equal to T1. Let's try. T5 minus T1. It's full of zeros, OK? So I insist we have not touched the components. We just changed the way we look at them. We organize them into a tensor. Perfect. So then the next thing we need to do is to learn how to multiply. So we're going to use a tensor. We're going to use one of these tensors. To codify our state. So we're going to use a tensor with n legs, n equal to 5 in the next example, to codify our state psi. Okay. And what we want to accomplish is the following. We would like to multiply this times a two-body term. Our Hamiltonian breaks into two-body terms. And we want to multiply our state with a two-body term. That's what we would like to do. If we can do this, and we can do this also, say, for the first two sides and for the rest of sides, then that's the same as multiplying the state times the Hamiltonian. Okay? We're using that the Hamiltonian breaks as a sum of local terms. So let's exploit that to reduce the multiplication of h times psi into a sum of small multiplications. All right, so, and here's how I want to, I'm just going to consider this term. And here's how we could do it. So first, I draw something, and then we try to code it. So we'll start with psi, which in this example has, it's the state of five spins, five sides. And one thing we could do is we could bring the second and third index into the first and second position. Okay? We could do that. Then we could join these two indices, multiply them by a matrix that corresponds to the two-body Hamiltonian term, and then we just undo whatever we did here. So we unsplit the index, right? So this would be, here we use permute to change the order of the indices. Here we use reshape. Here we actually, we will also put these indices together. You'll see why. And then we can just undo that. So another reshape. And then finally, another permute that will take this back to the first position, second position, third position. And we are done. So what I've done here, I want to justify why I'm doing this. But first, is it clear what I'm doing? I'm using permute and reshape sequentially to bring the initial vector, which is, the initial state psi, which is a tensor with five indices, into, at this stage here, if I look at what object I have, right? If I look at all these objects here, it has only two legs. It's a matrix. It's a matrix. And this one is also a matrix. So I'm doing a matrix multiplication. And then the result is another matrix. And then I undo all the steps that I used to bring this tensor into a matrix form to go back to a tensor form with five indices. Okay. And the reason why I'm bringing things, so the key, if you remember what I said, all this permute and reshape are not touching the coefficients in psi. The only transformation that is taking place is when I multiply times this guy, which represents a Hamiltonian term on two sides. Okay? And so what I'm saying is that all these operations, I was just moving elements around without actually changing them. And at this point, I have a matrix, a multiplication. MATLAB and computers are good at multiplying matrices. They have been designed to multiply matrices. They've not been designed to multiply tensors. If you want to multiply two tensors together, you bring them into matrix form, you multiply them as matrices, and then you bring them back to tensor form. And so this is what we're doing here. We're turning our tensor into a matrix with two indices, multiply times another matrix, and then we go back to a tensor form. OK, so this is what we're trying to accomplish. OK? And now let's do it. Questions?
I mean, this is probably a bit pedantic, but I mean, if you do that, then you don't reduce to 2 to the n, but 2 to the n times some polynomial of n, right? I mean, it doesn't really matter. But.
Well, it's a bit pedantic, but it's true.
No, because the number of the number of local terms is polynomial, and so yeah.
Okay, that's what you meant. Okay, so this 2 to the 2 is a 4 here, right?
Yeah.
So you can have terms here, but the exponent. Okay, so I think the focus was on this part. It's a very good point. So I generally don't even worry about these prefactors, but strictly speaking, they are there. All right, so let's try to do all these steps. So how do we start? Well, first we create, we want to create our state, and our state is going to be random, and then has 5 components. Each component, each index takes, so it has 5 indices. Each index takes 2 values, so that would be a way to do it. Okay? So now Psi contains our state, a state of 5 spins. We want to have a Hamiltonian term, which we can just write as, it's a matrix, it's a 4 times 4 matrix. So maybe rank 4, and then just, this is not important, but we can just make sure that it's Hermitian or symmetric. Okay, so we've created a Hamiltonian term.
So question kind of going back, the matrix in orange, like if you want to, let's say, implement sigma x just on one of the tensors, is it obvious like what that format, what that new matrix should be?
You could do it in, on one, just one side if you wanted to. If it's a polymatrix acting on one side, it's not a two-body thing.
Okay, well, so how about for two-body?
For a two-body? It's, so, okay, so you have already, so what was in orange? The single one? Okay, so you already have built it in a way that it has a single input index and output index. And this was this will be the result of joining two indices together. So the cron, when you use cron function, effectively you are turning two matrices into a single matrix. It joined the indices for you. So if you are wondering how do I take a sigma x times tensor sigma x term into that form, cron did it for you already. Right? So now you have a single matrix with indices that take 4 values. Right? It's a 4 times 4 matrix. That's what you want to plug there. All right, so we have psi, we have H2. So let's start this. So we said first we permute. I'm going to follow that drawing there. So the first step is I'm going to create some, I'm going to permute the sides on psi, so I'm calling the result M. And what I'm doing is I'm taking, you see this permutation says 2, 3, 1, 4, 5. It's telling you that on the first, the new first index is used to be the second one. The new second index used to be the third one, and so on. Is that part clear? This vector, right? It's telling you that the second index, what used to be the second index, now becomes the first index. What used to be the third index, right? You have it here. Third index becomes the second one. What used to be the first index becomes the first, the third one, and the index 4 and 5 stay in their places. Is that clear? Okay, perfect. So M is psi with a permutation of indices. Now we're going to take M and change it a bit more. So we'll reshape it. As we said, we're going to join the first two indices. So that's going to be take M, reshape M. And we are going to do 2. What's this? 2 to the 2 and 2 to the 3. We're taking the first two indices together and a third, fourth, and fifth index together into just two indices of dimensions 4 and 8. Okay? All right, so then we are going to create a new state, new psi, which is going to be H2 times M. Here's where it should be clear that M is a matrix. Now, M is a matrix. It's not a square matrix. is rectangular. It's a 4 times 8 matrix, right? And you can multiply it on one side by a 4 times 4 matrix. So that's how we multiply, how we obtain the new state. But of course, the new state needs to be reformatted back to the original form, which means that we have to undo the reshape and undo the permute. So a useful way to do that is new psi is going to be reshape of new psi, comma, and then 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. That is splitting the indices back to what they used to be. And finally, new psi is going to be a permutation. And then we would have to think about how to invert the permutation that we did before. But actually, MATLAB has, and this can be done. We just think about what's the inverse permutation. But there is an instruction, a function that is called in I permute, which is the inverse permutation of whatever permutation you put in here. So this allows us to, this saves us from having to think. Oh, you're right. Okay. All right, so this is the new psi, and we're done, okay? So this is how we're gonna multiply our state, which is now a tensor with n component, with n indices, by how we multiply it by a two-body Hamiltonian term. We organize all the indices such that the two indices involved in this multiplication become the first two, and the rest of indices are behind. And we join all the indices into the first two and the rest, such that we obtain a matrix. Now that we have a matrix, we multiply this matrix by H2, by the Hamiltonian term, and then we undo the two steps that led us there. Perfect. So, if this is clear, then in the last 5 minutes, we can use this to start a new function. So this new function is going to be power method 2. So new file script. Sorry, it's not a function, it's a script. It's going to be power method 2. And what is it? Okay, and it's going to be a very simple one. So maybe you can copy paste this from other places. Psi 2014, session 2, power method 2. And we're going to write that this has cost, what was it? 4n, or n times 2 to the n. OK. And then what we can do is, well, clear all. Now let's be ambitious. Let's put n equal to 17. Nobody should panic. It should be fine. Iterations, say 100 iterations. Then h equal to 1, j equal to 1. And then what we want to do is we want to create the two-body term that we're going to be applying on all pairs of indices, contiguous pairs of indices. But instead of that, I've done this for you. So it's called create two-site Ising Hamiltonian. And I just need to input h and j, and the result of this will be a four times four matrix corresponding to this Hamiltonian term. You could even see whether this runs. Yeah. So if you run that, then you'll see the Hamiltonian, the two side Hamiltonian, two spin Hamiltonian. Okay, so we don't need to see it again. And so now it's where we need to make sure that this Hamiltonian term, we need to make sure that the Hamiltonian has the ground state energy as the lowest energy state. So a way to guarantee that is the following. We take, we compute E2 as the eigenvalues of H2. And then we say E max is equal to, it's going to be E24. Right, so we take the largest eigenvalue of this two-body term, and then we define H2 neck, so a new version of the two-body term, as being H2 minus, we subtract the maximum eigenvalue times identity, okay? And so if you want to see what happened here, let's run this. And now let's compute, let's compare the eigenvalues of H2 with the eigenvalues of H2 neck. Okay, so what we've done is we've made sure that all the eigenvalues are negative. And now we have that our two-body term is negative defined. So the sum of two-body terms is going to be negative defined. This guarantees that the ground state has the largest absolute value, okay? I'm just preparing things to make sure that the power method is going to work. It's not going to fail because maybe the largest energy was had largest absolute value than the lowest energy. All right, but these are just small details. So, and then here's the interesting part. So let's prepare the state psi. So let's, we want to do this for an arbitrary number of sites, so we need to create a vector with n components. So if we run this now, what you see is that V has been created in such a way that it's a vector with 17 twos. Okay, so this is the vector that we want to now use to create our state. So psi is going to be equal to rand of V, right? And if you run this, then you can see that the size of psi is exactly what we wanted. Okay, it has 17 indices, each index runs from 1 to 2. So this is where we put the wave function. And now we just initialize the energies. We'll have two different energies, and then we have a loop that is very similar to what we did before. So we're going to apply, we're going to start with our state, we apply the Hamiltonian once, twice, three times. So this is a loop. We'll do it capital Q times. And how do we go about this? So, well, we would have to do what I explained. And again, I've written a function that does this for you. So the idea is that you can go and check how the function works. And you should really do that because in the homework, you'll have to generalize this function. But you don't need to do it right now. So this function does what I explained before. It takes psi, acting on n sites, and it applies hneck on every pair of sites, every contiguous pair of sites, OK? And it takes the sum of that. So the result is a new state psi, which is the result of multiplying it by the Hamiltonian. That's what we wanted to have. And then what do we have to do? Well, we have to normalize psi. And this we can do, for instance, in the following way. We take psi and we reshape it into a vector, column vector of 2 to the n components. And once we have that, the norm of psi is nothing but the square root of this vector in row form times the vector in column form, so the scalar product. Okay, this gives us the norm, and so psi, we want it normalized, so we divide it by its norm. And that's it. Then there is another function that functions that works in a very similar way as the one that applies H2, which will compute the energy. And we're done. We just want to plot Q as a function, sorry, the step and the energy. If you want to plot two numbers on the same line, you just do it like this. You put them into between brackets. And at the end of the process, we want to plot the result. So let's plot the energy. And then I myself tried to learn something yesterday. So this is completely unnecessary. But I thought it was fun. Color. So this is just giving you more options for the plot. And I'm done. So I'm going to try to see whether this runs.
Sorry.
Yeah?
What is the Q if Q thing before N?
What is that?
Before the N?
Oh, this thing? I'm asking to, so Q is running from 1 to capital Q. So it's the iteration, the step that we're in, and a number of multiplications of powers of H. Mm-hmm. And E of Q is the energy at that step.
So you're just printing it? Or?
And it's just going to show it on the screen, yes. So that if the program is very slow, you see where you are, right? It could take half an hour, so you want to know how, in which step out of, in which step you are. And now I see that I should have put semicolon here. Okay, so let me run this and see. What we are getting is the step, which is the step, and this is the energy at that step. And remember, we are dealing with 17 spins. So that was a very large wave function. And we plotted something here, and you see how the energy is converging. Maybe it's not completely converged, so just put, I don't know, 300.
Don't you need to reshift the energy again?
Reshape the energy.
So I mean, you shifted the energy down.
Right. So if you look at the function that computes the energy,
okay.
I inputted H2, not H2 neck.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. I was very careful. That's a good point. Be sure that you go back to the original Hamiltonian. So yeah, and you can see the energy is converging. Okay, so that's 17 sites. Now you could try 19. Let's try 19. I think the time is up, but let's try this. So 19. Well, we're still okay. No, it's progressing a bit slower, but so what about 21? Oh, it's doing it. So what about, I don't know, 23? That's really risky. So 23. Here's the first iteration. Okay, so it takes a few seconds per iteration. Now you have to wait 200 steps, but it will do it. So you can go to much larger Hilbert space dimension with that. We are dealing right now with 23 spins. Okay? Perfect. So that's what I wanted to explain to you today. You'll have to digest this because you have to generalize it in a way that not only you can get the ground. So in the power method, you end up in the ground state. Okay? But if your system is invariant under translations, then you can compose this multiplication by the Hamiltonian with another operation in such a way that you get the ground state on each momentum sector. Okay, so the ground state here has momentum 0. If you translate it, you get back the ground state. if you translate, there are so there are states that are invariant in the translations, but when you translate them, they give you a phase. I think this will be described in more detail in the homework, the notes for the homework. But the idea is that you want to compose this with a momentum preservation to obtain not just the ground state, but actually the lowest energy state in every single momentum sector, and this will give you a dispersion relation for this system. But as I said, more details will appear, will come with the homework. Is that right, Dennis? Okay, then we'll stop here.